Zoom holds that you're not allowed to leave.
Call the meeting to order. Join me with the pledge. Salute. Pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all for joining us this afternoon at noon. I see a bunch of new teachers too, so that's exciting too. Welcome. So our first item, our only item, is the reopening of the 2021-2022 school year.
Okay, so the reason we're having a special meeting today is because, you know, as usual, life changes when you don't expect it to. So leaving the end of last year, I can't speak for other people. I fully expected that we would be back to life as normal by the start of this school year. Doesn't appear to be so. So I'm going to go over, I have a PowerPoint I'm going to go over and with some discussions about mainly masking, facial coverings, et cetera. And then I'm happy to answer any questions and then we'll go from there. So if you could put that up. Okay, so let's just start off with kids are coming back to school. Okay, that's the bottom line. We're not going to be offering any kind of a distance learning option. for our students. There is some laws about independent study that I will talk about today. Again, that may or may not be an option for us because it may not be financially a reasonable accommodation. So we could enter into an agreement with Plumas Lake, who does have a full-on independent study for parents that may want to take that option. But hopefully after today, everybody will be happy with just bringing their kids back to school. So.
You can scroll down on that once.
Okay. All right, so let's talk about the legal mandates that everybody's heard about. The California Department of Health on July 12th put out new guidelines for K-12 districts. Right before that, the CDC had put out guidelines, and unfortunately, as usual, they don't match. So now we're in the predicament of trying to choose what works best for our school district. So the foundation behind both, but the foundation stated in the CDPH guidance, is all students must have access to safe and full in-person instruction and to as much possible instructional time. So that means kids in school. Now, at the time in which all of this was discussed, distance learning was no option in the state of California for the future. When they passed the budget, one of the trailer bills put in a independent study program option. So in this guidance, and this is really why we're here today, the guidance issued includes mandatory requirements for K-12 students to mask while indoors, and adults in K-12 school settings are required to mask when sharing indoor spaces with students. Probably 2 hours, maybe less than 2 hours, after this came out, they originally said students who do not wear masks will be excluded. Then you go back up to what their statement is. All students have. So within 2 hours, as the state typically does, they tossed it onto the districts and said, this is our mandate. How you enforce it is going to be an individual decision by district. So the guidance leaves the enforcement of mask mandate as a local decision, specifically the implementation of local protocols to enforce mask requirements. I'll get this right. So, as I said, there's two instructional models. Model one is full day school, in-person instruction, traditional, as we've always done, in-person instruction with safety protocols mandated by
recording in progress.
All the others. Okay, now I'm gonna have, it's not gonna work.
What is that?
Okay. And then the second one that came out was independent study. This is a voluntary optional program that is only available for students whose needs may be best met through the study outside the regular classroom setting. Districts can apply for a waiver if they cannot fiscally support the program based on the numbers of students that may enroll. Here's the problem in a district our size. You have one kindergartner, 3 second graders, 2 fourth graders, and 14 middle school kids. How do you do that? How do you do it? You can't bring a teacher that can teach kindergarten through 8th grade, single subjects and all that. So if we have an influx of kids in independent study, we'll have to really figure out how to make that work. There are options. There are, you can pay teachers to do it after school hours, because it doesn't have a parameter of time in which independent study has to happen. But we're hoping that in our community, they bring their kids back to school. But talking about independent study, it is not what you saw during the first 2 waves of COVID. It is actual, what I would consider more like what our middle school was doing with their distance learning, everyday instruction with kids. So it's not Edmentum, where we had that last year, where we gave kids assignments and checked in with them how they're doing. But there was really no significant teaching happening. This is live interaction, which is defined as interaction between the student and the teacher or paraprofessional that may include other students. The interaction may take place in person, so you can bring them back to the school site to do that, or telephonic communication. Synchronous instruction is defined as a classroom style instruction. So you're teaching your kids, they're on computers, you're teaching them. There's interaction both ways. They're asking questions, you're going back and forth. The key to this one is two-way communication between the teacher and student. So then they further go to say that in grades K through 3, and they specifically left out TK, which is interesting to me. So there's no independent study for TK based on this guideline. Daily synchronous instruction for all students throughout the school year. So that is holding your class on a computer during the school day or after school hours, depending on when we set it up. And it's daily instruction. It doesn't have a time frame. So it doesn't mean that necessarily that you're going to be teaching as if they were in the classroom, but it is daily, all students in a classroom. Grades 4 through 8 have daily live interactions. So I may be meeting, if I'm a fourth grade teacher, I might be meeting with a student individually or a small group of students individually for live interaction. And then at least weekly synchronous instruction for all students throughout the school year. So back to, got to have them all together, teaching lessons. And it goes on, I didn't put the 9 through 12 because it doesn't affect us, but it has that as well. All right, so here's some general district requirements put out by both CDPH and CDC. Physical distance. So there's no longer a 6-foot rule or a 3-foot rule. It is all schools will attempt to maximize the space between the seating of desks to the greatest extent practical, but will not exclude students from in-person learning to keep minimum distance requirements. In other words, if we have class sizes of 24, all 24 get to come. If that means they're within 2 feet of each other, because that's what the size of the classroom is, that's what it means. There's no requirement to have that, okay? Facial coverings. As I explained, CDPH guidelines, all TK through 12th grade students are required to wear facial coverings while indoors. Staff are required to wear facial coverings in the presence of students, regardless of vaccination status. That is what the CDPH says. Face coverings while outdoors are optional. Enforcement of wearing the face coverings for students. It will be a local decision. CDC guidelines varies a bit from CDPH in that CDC says staff that have been vaccinated and show proof are highly recommended, but not mandated to wear facial coverings. So there's the difference between CDPH and CDC. Transportation, nothing changes from what it was last year. If you're on the bus, the students and the staff are required to wear facial coverings while riding a bus or a van. Windows should be open or cracked to increase ventilation. Okay, so there's really no change to what they said last year. Here's some changes. Cafeteria and recess. So no more grab and go lunches. And we're going to have lunch in the cafeterias. To the extent possible, physical distancing will be maximized while unmasked for the purpose of eating and drinking, especially indoors. If possible, spaces outside the cafeteria will be used for mealtime. So the school sites might set up a quad lunch place for kids to eat. And then it's, you know, they can be, again, if it's 110 degrees, not going to happen. If it's pouring down rain, let's hope it does. It's not going to happen. But again, our cafeterias will be open. Students will not be required to wear face coverings outside during recess or PE.
Will they be split like they've been split, or do they all get to play together?
Do they
get to play on all the equipment? It's going to be normal recess?
Yes.
Okay.
When I say normal recess, it may be that the school is, instead of having second, third grade out there at the same time, they have second grade out and then they have third grade out. So it's less dense, but there's not gonna be, Rhonda's class gets to go here today, Nikki's class gets to go there today, no. So again, for me, the disconnect is, if I'm outside playing on equipment, sweating and spitting in each other's faces, it's okay. But the instant I walk through this door, I gotta throw a mask on. It's a disconnect. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but here we are.
Zero.
Extracurricular activities. The district will follow the CDPH requirements for youth sports. However, they haven't put them out yet. So they say the new guidance for youth sports is forthcoming. It's probably not affecting us as much as it would a high school, right? But for us, our plan is to have middle school sports, assuming we have somebody to play, right? So if we have it, but Marysville and Plumas Lake and Lincoln and Yuba City don't, then we have nobody to play. It doesn't make a lot of sense to have it. But right now, our plan is to have middle school sports. So the guidance is forthcoming. Student athletes who attend independent study, if the program is offered, are not participating in school athletics. Now, that's different than high school. They can, but in middle schools, at least in our middle school, if you're gonna be playing sports, you need to be at campus with the rest of the kids. Clubs, performances, student-related activities will follow whatever requirements we get for indoor and outdoor activities. So what I would say to that is, we might have a dance, but it might be outside, right? You might have a running rally, but it might be in the quad instead of in the multipurpose room. Or we might have a running rally in the multipurpose room because we don't know what the next month or two brings. I want to reiterate that we have sophisticated GPS bipolar ionization systems in all of our HVAC systems. They're still up and running, they're still working, they're still maintained. We have an outside company that maintains them, so they're on the hook if they don't maintain them correctly. And our HVAC filters are replaced quarterly and more frequently as needed. So our ventilation system that we put in last year is as good as it gets. I have emails every day from companies trying to get us to buy what we already have. So that system is good for our classrooms. And last year, the answer to the question was, yes, each room has its own HVAC system. So there's not a sharing of HVAC. And then daily cleaning, our plan is to clean and disinfect classrooms on a daily basis. We will include using the ionized sprayers once a day, end of school. Not doing it in between classes or in between periods, or we're not doing AM, PM, so we don't do it between that. But they will go around and spray as part of the cleaning of the classroom. And then classroom hand sanitizer and disinfectant wipes will continue to be supplied as needed. So they have this new thing called modified quarantine. As if we didn't already have enough information, this is a new one. So, both parties are wearing, so somebody has COVID, okay? Both parties were wearing facial covering in the indoor setting. An unvaccinated student who is considered close contact, which again is 15 minutes over a 24-hour period, may undergo a modified 10-day quarantine. They may continue to attend school as long as they're asymptomatic, as long as they continue to wear the appropriate mask as required. Here's the third bullet, which is as long as a student gets tested twice weekly for the 10-day period. So a student will have four tests for COVID over a 10-day period.
At whose cost? Ours.
Ours. Okay. And continue to quarantine. So they can't do any of the after school stuff. Right, they have to go home. Now, most parents aren't going to subject their kid to four testings in 2 weeks, so they're just going to keep them out of school for 10 days. That's probably what's going to happen. But it is an option. So facial covering, non-compliance option. So this is what I kind of see by reading through all of the guidances. We can instruct parents that any student who fails to follow the facial covering requirement is not entitled to attend in-person instruction during the pandemic, and immediately exclude them from school and offer them an independent study program. Okay, I am not recommending that, but that is one option. Another option is to completely ignore what the CDPH and CDC says about facial coverings and just let them come without them. Not recommending that either, because our insurance companies and our lawyers say, do not make that recommendation. So I'm not making that recommendation. So the approach that I'll be talking about here in a minute is an approach that allows the school district, schools individually, and parents to work together, giving parental choice as a priority before any other options need to be explored. Okay, they also said in their July 12th health guidance that they're going to give us another guidance November 1st, no later than November 1st. So that's my last bullet. This is an extremely fluid situation as we continue to deal with for the last 2+ years. Changes constantly. I'm not able to predict the future. So therefore, everything that I'm recommending today can change tomorrow, right? That's just the way it works, unfortunately. So what is our goal? All students must have access to a safe and full in-person instruction and to as much instructional time as possible. That's in the CDPH goal. That's our goal. We want kids back in school. We want them learning in the classroom. The requirement, is it a requirement or a local decision? The wearing of face coverings by students when indoors at the TK through 12 school sites and on buses is a state requirement. It is not our requirement, okay? We did not make a local decision about that. We can't change that mandate. Can't. It's a state mandate. All we can do is talk about how we enforce a mandate, because that's what they've given us the green light to do. Non-vaccinated adults are also required to wear facial coverings in the presence of students based on both the CDPH and the CDC guidelines. The CDC guidelines changes it for vaccinated adults, saying it's highly recommended but not mandated to wear facial coverings in the presence of students. We have a caveat that others don't have, which is Beale Air Force Base. Beale Air Force Base has issued a directive that everyone inside all buildings on Beale Air Force Base will be required to wear masks, whether vaccinated or not. And also, they extended it even further and said, if you're within 6 feet of somebody outside, you need to have a mask on. That is a Beale Air Force Base rule. We will have to adhere to that rule when we are out at Beale Air Force Base. The last part, the state guidance, local protocols to address enforcement of the mask requirements must be developed. So again, throw it back on us and let us decide.
Did you say that we're going to have to follow the Beale
yes.
guidelines even on the schools that are not on base?
No.
Or just the ones on
base? Just the ones on base. Because even though there are schools, they are on federal property, which they make the rules. So we have to follow what Beale Air Force Base is saying. So, let's see. Why is it not working? All right, so here comes my recommendations, and I'm throwing it back to the board after 2 pages of this, and then you can decide. We can ask questions, people can ask questions, and we can make some decisions. So I'm recommending we take what's called a passive approach to enforcement for mask mandate for students. These are the parts of the enforcement policy that I recommend. If a student arrives at school without a face covering, Then one will be provided to the student and they will be encouraged to wear the facial covering. If the student does not wear it correctly or at all, they will not be excluded from the classroom or from school. They will not lose merit points, get blue slips, get their name on the board, whatever, no discipline whatsoever for not wearing a mask. It also, you know, kids will wear their mask down here often so they can breathe better. We're not going to be going, Johnny, put that up. Johnny, put that up. It defeats the purpose of trying to instruct kids. So masks are not going to be, based on my recommendation, not going to be a factor for discipline or getting into it back and forth with students. District staff will not be placed in a compromising position to take enforcement actions for noncompliance. So therefore, staff will not send students to the office for noncompliance and will not level consequences. Students that are required, again, to wear a mask on the bus. Students will be given a mask. If they do not have one, they will be told to wear the mask. If the student does not wear the mask, the facial covering, the driver will not discipline the student and will not remove the student from the bus. Okay. There are situations in other districts where bus drivers have pulled buses over and told kids to get off the bus. I don't know what kind of liability they're thinking about doing that, but that's not going to happen here. It is the district's continued desire to focus all of our attention and resources on the instruction of our students. The district will continue to deploy all of the COVID prevention measures and encourage all to comply with the CDPH and CDC guidelines. We just are not going to give consequences if they're not followed. Staff recommendations. Did you do that or did I do that? Following both guidance, all unvaccinated staff will be required to use facial coverings when inside and in the presence of students. If Mrs. Morris is in her classroom by herself, she does not need to have a mask on. Once the students arrive, if she is unvaccinated, then she will have to have a mask on the entire time students are there. All vaccinated, I'm recommending we follow the CDC in saying that all vaccinated staff are not required, but highly recommended to wear their facial coverings inside in the presence of students. Staff that are vaccinated will have to provide a copy of their vaccination card to me or wear a mask. Simple as that. Not taking your word for it. I got to have a copy of the mask, of the vaccination card. If you're choosing not to wear a mask, if you're going to wear a mask, I don't need to see your card. That's just the way the rules are going to work in the situation where we're saying vaccination or not. Staff working outside do not need to wear facial coverings unless they enter a room where students are present. Our grounds people do not need to wear a mask while they're mowing lawns. Even if they're mowing the quad, okay? If they're not in constant discussions with students, they do not need to have them on. Office staff, I've gone back and forth on this one. Office staff will not need to wear a facial covering unless students, other staff, and or parents are present or walk into the workspace. Basically what that means is secretaries are gonna have to have them on, but not up. And then when somebody walks in, they'll have to pull it up. Bus drivers must wear masks when driving students on the bus, but can remove them when they're driving alone. I don't want phone calls saying the bus driver didn't have a mask on without knowing whether kids are on the bus or not, right? But they shouldn't have to wear their mask driving back from Smartsville when there's not a kid on the bus. So that's what I would recommend for bus drivers. The exception to all of this is if you are a staff member at Lone Tree or Wheatland Charter Academy, you must adhere to the directive by Beale Air Force Base, and you will have to wear your facial coverings at all times while inside the building, vaccinated or not. They do not need to wear their facial coverings outside if they are over 6 feet apart. Students at Beale Air Force Base will not have to wear their masks outside playing, okay? But that's a Beale Air Force Base recommendation that or mandate that we must follow. That's it. That's what I'm putting together for you. I'm happy to answer any questions. And from the board first, and then we can open it up to questions that might be coming from the audience.
If someone is out because of close contact with COVID or needs to be tested before they get back, that 10-day period that they have to either be out or get tested twice a week and all that, are we going to do a home study packet for them?
Yeah, we would be required to do some sort of a, you know, teacher puts together a packet, sends it home for the kid. If a teacher is the one out, then we would have a substitute, which is somewhat problematic for us. Well, not just for us, everybody. There's not a lot of substitutes out there.
There will be some sort of, what do they call that? We used to, the independent study.
Thank you,
independent study.
Yeah, the rules on independent study have changed dramatically because of this. But I still think the short-term independent study is a viable option for a child who is out on, quarantine.
So basically, we're saying it's the parent's choice and the child's choice, basically, at the end of the day, even though we're recommending it.
So I would prefer to say it this way. We are mandating that students wear masks, but we are not going to give a child a consequence if the parent chooses not to. Or the child, the child with the parent's permission chooses not to.
I just, obviously, everybody knows that I'm not a masker. And so I tried to do some research, and I actually went to the pediatric department at Kaiser and talked to a couple doctors. And, you know, not only we know we're hurting our kids academically because the younger kids with their speech, they can't see the sounds, they can't. We're going to have a generation that grows up talking like they're deaf, which is going to end up costing more money in special ed costs because we're going to have them in speech, blah, 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 blah. But this doctor told me, he said, it's like wearing a dirty diaper on your face all day because kids don't clean them. They touch their face more. And so I like that there's not going to be any consequences. And I like that the basically, however you're wording it, that the parents have the overall choice of that. Well, I'm sad for Beal. I think you're going to see a lot of kids wanting to come into town.
Well, most kids at Beal, their parents live at Beal. They understand the ramifications of living on a base, and they abide or they don't, I guess. But, you know, back to your original statement, we are not able to just say nobody has to wear a mask because the mandate is the mandate. And since we're a government organization, we have to follow the mandate, which again, I wish I were an attorney because I think I would go to court and see if they actually have the right to mandate everybody to wear a mask, but that's a whole different discussion. The issue related to dirty masks and all that, those are real. Those are absolutely real issues. And,
the increase in asthmatic kids, the more upper respiratory that they have, which has increased the testing for COVID because they think that that's what it is when it's actually they're breathing in their own crap, actually. But
we do have a situation in Yuba County where we are considered a highly infectious area and a very low vaccinated area. Like last time I saw it, it was 39% of the people in Yuba County were vaccinated, and our rate of COVID has increased dramatically over the last few weeks.
And what is our homeless population number?
Yeah, I'm not saying who it is. I'm just giving you the facts of what I'm reading. So one of the things that they do put into the guidance is that if you're in a highly affected area, then vaccinated adults should also be wearing masks. But I think they've covered that where they say it's highly recommended, but
people get vaccinated if you're back to square
one. That's another point that's well taken.
And it's kind of like all of us in here, when we did our oath, we uphold the Constitution. Well, like you said, if we were attorneys, this totally tramples on the constitutional right.
Well, let me also just reiterate from the other aspect. I've asked around because, you know, I got this, somebody sent me something that was posted on Facebook that Plumas Lake's not enforcing anything. Let's just transfer all our kids to Plumas Lake. Hogwash. Plumas Lake is enforcing this mandate 100%. There's no, and they're enforcing it. And if you don't wear a mask, then you get transferred into the independent study program. The high school, their rationale is exactly like ours. Roseville High School District, exactly like ours. I don't know what Marysville's doing because they're in the transition of hiring a new superintendent and all of that. Yuba City has a tiered program where it's like three different tiers. The first day you get handed a mask and you're asked to wear it. The second through fifth day you get handed a mask, you're asked to wear it, parents called. After 5 days of non-compliance, then they have an independent study school that you would be opted over to. You can do that in large districts because you have enough fourth graders to make a class. They actually have independent study teachers in that school. We don't have that situation here. And I seriously doubt we will. I'll look and see what it says up here.
I'm gonna try again.
Hey Robin, you wanna unmute and ask your question?
Hi Craig, quick couple of questions. I'll try to make them quick. The first question is your recommendation about teachers wearing or staff wearing, following the CDC guidelines and then having it be optional, strongly encouraged but not required for those who are vaccinated. That follows CDC guidelines, but it doesn't follow CDPHS. So where does that leave me as a teacher who is vaccinated? If I choose not to wear a mask, does that make me liable because I'm violating the state's guidance?
I don't think there's any liability for you whatsoever. The district says, if the board adopts my recommendation, and again, CDC could change their recommendation and mandate it for vaccinated people as well relatively quickly. But for now, there's no liability on your part if you choose to, if you're vaccinated and you choose not to wear a mask.
Okay, because it's conflicting. The state, the CDPH says, yes, I will wear a mask, and CDC says it's optional.
Right.
So I don't know who trumps what.
I don't know who trumps what either, but I think that when they give us two options, we pick the one that works best for our district. And if we get, I mean, if we were to ask Dr. Liu, she would side with CDPH, right? So I think if we have a staff member who's vaccinated and is worried about some liability, then I would suggest they wear a facial covering.
Okay, my second question is about students who might be out on quarantine. If parents don't want to get them tested, are we going to continue with our educational subscription to Zoom so that I can Zoom with my kids after school or possibly Zoom them into a class when they're out?
Yes.
Okay. And the last one actually has to do with Dr. Liu. Do you anticipate, and I know you're not a mind reader, but I'm sure you probably have a pretty good idea. Do you anticipate a mandate coming down from our bi-county health officer for masking? Because I'm hearing some rumblings in the community in Yuba City and Marysville through some connections there that the mandate is forthcoming from her.
Well, and again, I think that goes back to your original question. Does she trump the CDC? And so it, as I said before, I would expect that Dr. Liu would say follow the CDPH, but I don't know that she has the authority to trump the CDC. I do think that the CDC is looking at it currently and probably will make some changes at some point, but while the window's open, I think that those adults that got vaccinated that choose to, you know, take a chance or whatever you want to say should have that authority based on the fact that the CDC says they can. So I don't know what Dr. Liu, I can tell you my experience with the Yuba Center Health Department is always they're more stringent than anybody else. So I don't see that changing. But again, I don't know that she trumps CDPH. She did trump it when it came to giving out vaccines, as you all remember, everybody else was making educators a priority and she chose not to do that, but she held all the cards, right? She had all the vaccines. This situation, I don't think she can trump CDC.
Okay, because I know she, I do know she has the ability within her local realm to make those choices more strict than CDPH, but not less strict.
Yeah.
So that was, I was just curious if you'd heard the same rumblings I've heard. That's all I have. Thank you.
I have actually heard the rumblings, Robin, and it's because of what I said before about the vaccination level of Yuba Sutter, and also the fact that we're considered a highly contagious area, but so is most of California again.
Yes, we are. I've heard our last rumblings. We are number two in terms of COVID rates in the entire state. Yeah. Not a great thing we want to have.
No, not good to be known for.
No. Thank you.
Thank you. Will academic intervention classes be offered again to students? I would think yes. I mean, I don't know why we wouldn't. So Jim, yes. Assuming we can find teachers that are willing to do it and we have enough students to take the classes, and et cetera, et cetera. Will there be consequences for teachers if they retaliate or bully a student over wearing or not wearing a mask? There's always consequences for adults that retaliate or bully students. I really don't see that happening, given the whatever the board decides today. But yes, there would be if they indeed were doing that. Elaine, if you want to unmute.
Hi, everybody. I had a question about whether or not the district will be continuing to offer COVID leave like they did last year for staff.
So good question. COVID leave based on the guidelines ends effectively September 30th. So between now and September 30th, COVID leave would continue. After that, I think that's up for further discussion, and I would expect that we will probably see COVID leave extend if they don't get control of the Delta variant. So as of right now, it is still in place until September 30th. Is that it, Elaine?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, thank you.
Okay, thanks. What are the requirements for teachers if one of the student tests positive for COVID? Well, again, we have the tracing that Angela will do and determine whether or not the teacher has been a close contact, for whatever that means nowadays. It's probably 3 feet, not 6 feet. I don't know. Did they change that one?
Not that I'm aware of.
If you're a vaccinated teacher, you do not have to be quarantined. That's the latest. If you're non-vaccinated, then we would go through the tracing policy and see if you are close contact. And then, yes, you would be sent home for the 10 days, or you can do the modified quarantine where you get tested. I mean, that's not just for students. That's also for the adults. There are school districts that are testing their staff every week. They come in on a Monday and right up the nose, and there you go. So there are places that are doing that. So what you're saying is you're mandating wearing a mask, but you won't enforce the mandate if someone chooses not to wear a mask. Pretty much. I mean, we have to mandate the mask, right? But the state has given us the authority for the enforcement piece. And I can tell you right now, based on the many years I've been in this business, we will spend more hours dealing with mask issues than we will teaching if we make it a huge issue. It's not worth it. Having no consequences effectively gives them permission. It gives them options. Doesn't give them permission. We're still saying it's mandated. It gives them options based on what, like board member Brown was saying, it's based on, I said that because there's so many people I don't know here. I don't want to just call you Mickey.
I just threw you off.
Based on parents, you know, parents have, they should have a say in this. Absolutely. They should absolutely have a say in how their kids come to an environment in which we're in.
And I appreciate, and I think a lot of the people that reach out to me will appreciate that as well, that you feel for them as parents and for the students.
So Michael is asking again, so where is the mandate taking place? The same mandate that we all have in everything that we do. We mandate that you drive 25 miles an hour down the road. That's a mandate. Not everybody does it. We're mandating that they wear them. The state gives us the authority as an individual district, at least currently, gives us the authority to say, how are we going to enforce it? We are enforcing it in a sense that it is not going to become an issue in our district, at least not right now, for the teacher to just continue to teach kids. Heather Selkin, if you want to unmask.
I'm not masked. So my question is, in your slide before, you had mentioned that the quarantine would be, the verbiage was masked students. So if we're giving them the choice, pretty much, then how does that play in for quarantine? And for those of us, especially that see 120 kids a day, how are we going to be keeping up with who has a mask on and who doesn't each day in class?
Yeah, so the quarantine that I put up on the slide, the modified quarantine, would not be available for somebody who did not have their mask on based on the guidelines. It would only be if the person who had COVID and the close contact both had masks on, then they have the option. Now, I'm not really sure how that works. And again, we haven't run into the situation because it's brand new, but how does it work when they're outside on the play equipment together? They're unmasked. So is it inside masks or outside masks? So Heather, I'd love to answer the question completely, but I can just tell you that if you have a student who is not masked in your classroom and he or she is a close contact with a COVID case, they do not get the modified quarantine. They must go home within 10 days.
So that's going to fall on the teacher's shoulders to keep track of it, of all of our students every day.
Well, actually, it's probably going to fall on Angela's shoulders to keep track of the tracing. So she will ask you, if you don't know, then you don't know. And if you don't know, and the student says, I wasn't masked, then we're going with them. They weren't masked. So I do not think that you need to be, again, our concentration needs to be on teaching our kids and not looking at kids and saying, okay, I'm going to make a list of who's got their mask on, who doesn't. That's not going to solve the problem. I understand with 120 kids, it's a much more difficult thing to deal with than if you have 24. But yeah, I have no expectations that you're doing a checklist every day that's going to say a kid masked or not masked. We'll err on the side that they're not, if we can't find out, I'm assuming, right, Angela? So.
Would you explain again what you just said about if somebody at home has COVID, then they have to stay home?
So
how is that different than if they come and then they get to stay with a mask?
Well, so if you have a close contact in a classroom, student has COVID, but they have a mask on, student is considered a close contact, but they have a mask on, then they can follow the modified quarantine rules, which are the ones I explained. If neither had a mask on, one doesn't have a mask on, the kid gets COVID at home, which is where 99.9% of our cases have ever come from, not in school. The kid has COVID at home, they don't get the modified. Because there's no way to know that we know they weren't masked at home. So they don't fall into the modified quarantine. If they were at Costco, they're not wearing a mask right now, right? There's all kinds of places that aren't wearing masks. Now, of course, Sac County and Yolo County, two of our surrounding areas, have both reinstituted masks everywhere. Placer County hasn't, Yuba County and Sutter County haven't yet. but doesn't mean they won't. Can I have, yes, Lauren, if you want to unmute.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to ask, Craig, I saw your slide where it said that if a student arrives on campus without a mask, they'll be given one and asked to wear it. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, I'm just curious for myself because I don't want to send my kid without one and then have them start kindergarten, you know, kind of being a little defiant.
I mean, honestly, if you're a parent who you're not going to have your kid wear a mask, make a teacher aware of that so that they're not going to every day be going like that, right? I mean, have some communication with the teacher, I guess, would be my best advice on that.
But if they ride the bus, they'll have a mask.
They'll have a mask. They'll be given a mask. Doesn't mean they're going to necessarily be wearing it, but they most kids do on the bus.
So with that, can the student just say no thank you and not have to take it?
I don't see why not. Okay. I mean, again, we're treading in waters that we are not going to know until we hit them. But yeah, older kids I would expect can, but Lauren's little ones are kindergartners, so she might feel obligated to take the mask. So yeah, Michael, you keep saying the same thing about mandating, and I understand it. We are given the authority to enforce it the way we feel is best for our district. We are mandating masks. We are not enforcing the wearing of masks in a sense that there'll be consequences for it. I don't know how more effective to say that. So
with that, enforcing the mandate or having the mandate but not enforcing it for someone who does not wear it, is that just for the kids or is that for the staff also?
No, staff have to follow the rules. We
vaccinated
staff, if they've given proof to me that they've been vaccinated, by same thing you would do if you flew on an airplane. When I went to Hawaii, I had to upload our vaccine or get tested. So it's the same thing. If you give, it's not, I'm not going off that list that we had originally. If you can give me a copy of your vaccine
your
card.
Trust is so limited.
The liability is so high.
The trust is just so
high. Yeah. Okay. Will parents be allowed to volunteer this year? Yes. But they will have to wear a mask. They'll have to wear a mask. There's no way to do the whole proof that they have vaccines. So parent volunteers will be available not only for in the classroom, if they're wearing a facial covering, but also on field trips.
So could they,
if we have one,
if we do, they have to turn in fingerprints. Couldn't they turn in their vaccination card at the same time?
I mean, I suppose they could. Most of them are probably already fingerprinted unless they're kindergarten, but we can cross that bridge when we have the first parent volunteer that says, here's my vaccination card. I'm happy to talk about that. The thing is, I have to make sure that our administration knows who's not required to wear a mask and who is required to wear a mask. And having to do that, not knowing when volunteers are coming and going, could be problematic. So at this point, I'm just saying volunteers need to wear a mask.
Jenna, you have to personally bring it in. She's asking if she can just take a picture of it. Nope, she's got to bring it in. She could alter it.
Oh, Jenna, do you want a paper copy or will a picture suffice the vaccine card? Yeah, you can send me a picture. I know what a vaccine card looks like. If you're somebody who's going to make your own, honestly, I got no time for it.
So explain.
And I know you wouldn't, Jeff.
If you're vaccinated and your teacher, you don't have to wear a mask.
You're highly recommended to wear a mask based on the mask. Again, I'm taking the CDC guidelines. CDPH says you are. But again, you guys have to make that decision.
I understand.
Right. You have to decide what you want. There's a message coming in apparently.
Are we going to discuss a couple other things that have to do with the school year? Because I have a couple
a question that has nothing to do with COVID or masks, that has to do with actual school?
Absolutely. I can actually fill you in on a few other things having to do with after school. I'm just waiting to see if Kathy's typing something or if we're getting a false message.
That was just two last ones sent by the
Okay. Thank you. So we'll keep an eye on the questions as they come up. All right, fire away.
Okay, so I had a couple, actually three, para educators. They saw your email that you sent out,
mm-hmm.
and the times, was that just like a broad time, the 8 to 1? Because what they came back with is, I think most of them at Maitland L do 8:30 to 1, would like to do 8:30 to 1:30, because at 8 is the same, arriving the same time the kids do. They do their roll, their lunch count, and they said it's kind of a waste of their half hour of, like, if they get their half hour later when the kids do, they can get right into working with students and not having to spin their wheels while they do carpet time, calendar, that kind of stuff. And I know that's a site-based decision, but I was
told. So my email was only an example, that's 8 to 1, and then they would have a lunch, and then they would go into the after-school room. We have such varied schedules for all of our paraeducators. Somebody may want to do it, but they can't because their paraeducator's job doesn't coincide well with what we need for after school. So that's why we're kind of looking at the whole thing. But okay, it was just an example of time.
They were just saying that you get more bang for your buck.
Yeah, no. I understand
that.
So I was
just throwing that out there. So that was mine.
That's it? The only one?
That's my
other. So our after school program, we're hurting for employees everywhere, okay? So we have three openings in our cafeterias, one at Wheatland L and two at Bear River. We have one applicant. We still have some paraeducator openings. We're okay when it comes to certificated staff. We're finding those individuals. Our after school program was decimated. And so we needed one additional, to be able to service all the kids that we have rights to service or funding the service. At Bear River, we needed one more individual, which we're able to find that. At Wheatland L, we need two more. So we'll be able to service all the kids at Wheatland L and Bear River, assuming we pick up those two, which we have enough indication of people that are interested. Lone Tree, we needed 8. And Tara will have to do the program director and be the site lead. So I'm not sure if we're going to get enough at Lone Tree. We have had one person who teaches or who is in town that is willing to go out in the afternoons and do after school at the base. So we have some other people like that, but we do have some interest so far from some of the para educators. It's a costly proposition. I'm just going to tell you guys this, is that when we move somebody from 5 hours to 8 hours so they can cover the after school, it's not just paying an additional 3 hours, it's adding 12 grand of benefits to every employee that does that. So it's estimated to be about $150,000 cost, assuming that somebody isn't already getting benefits and they are the ones who take up the hours. So it is expensive, but if we don't do it, our after school program, at least in some places, will be non-existent, serving 20 kids, right? So we have to do something to make it a viable program. So that's kind of where we're at. Right now. Any other questions about?
How many hours is the cafeteria job that you?
Four, like 4 1/4, 4. And 3 or 3.5. No other questions? I don't see anything else coming across the.
One more.
How is CRT being dealt with at Wheatland School District? We're not at the point of even having a discussion or implementing anything to do with CRT at this point.
CRT.
CRT.
Explain what that means to people who don't know.
What is the acronym?
Critical
risk.
Race
theory. Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Nothing? I'm going to give it one more minute for anybody that's on Zoom, and then I'm going to toss it back to you guys for what we're going to put out. I don't have to stand there, Jennifer, keep an eye on it.
Is COVID leave still available?
Till September 30th.
And then it goes away?
Then it goes away. They still have their leave available. Now, it goes away September 30th right now, because that one was done in January. It does not mean that they won't do another one. Right? They could very well do another one.
But didn't it finish and they weren't getting paid and we extended it as... Just
we decided it ended in like December. We decided we were going to extend it as a district. And then they came back and did it anyways and backfilled it. It doesn't matter it matters what the government says. If they extend it, they extend it. The cost comes back to the district. The feds don't say, hey, we're extending COVID leave and we're going to give you X number of dollars for every teacher that's out or every classified employee that's out. It comes back to we're paying for the sub, and which we would do in a normal, right, if they were out sick and using their own sick leave. The difference is none of the leave of the employee is taken. The cost is the same. It's just the future cost of that. If that employee uses that leave some other time, then you double the cost. Most of our employees, when they retire, they have lots of leave on the books. So it's really not a huge issue for us. Other than subs, finding subs.
Stephen, the end of Stephen is another question.
Were school hours discussed? What will the hours be this school year? I could have Jody, can you tell us what Lone Tree's hours, and then Peter, you follow, and then either Andrew, Sherry, you follow, please. I don't have them in front of me.
It is going to be 8:10 until 2:15 for 4-5, and 8:30 to 2:15 for TK through 3. Everyone gets out at 1:15 on a minimum day.
Thank you. Peter?
That was Lone Tree.
That was Lone Tree and Wheatland Charter Academy. Peter from Wheatland L?
8:15 start, 2 o'clock dismissal, 1 o'clock on minimum day.
Perfect. And then Sherry put 8:05 to 2:10 before the 5th grade.
And it's 8:05 to 2:46 for 6 through 8. And then all of them get out at 1:10 on minimum days.
Perfect. Thank you, Paul. The answer to your question, I think I answered it actually as you were probably typing it, Robin, but no, the district does not get reimbursed for COVID.
Craig, did that change? There is no more tax credit at the end of the year equivalent to what you would have paid?
There's never been any credit. We don't pay taxes. So,
for
businesses that are non-governmental, they had a tax credit. For governmental, it's we're already giving money and use it.
Okay, thank you.
Skip April. Will Lone Tree students have to be 6 feet apart when eating then? No. That's not in the CDPH or the CDC, and it's not part of Beale Air Force Base recommend or requirements. So I would assume, I shouldn't assume, but I would assume as the airmen are eating in the cafeteria, they're not 6 feet apart. When you're on an airplane, you have to wear a mask unless you're eating or drinking. Hence, drink all the time. but you're not 6 feet apart. So I don't think in this situation, April, that we would have to have the kids 6 feet apart. It almost would hamper us to an extent that we wouldn't even be able to serve lunch because there's so many lunches that come in and out. So I'm going with no. Did I miss any other ones? Stephen, did you get the hours that you needed? Okay, you're welcome. And when this meeting is over, if you have questions afterwards, feel free to reach out. You don't have to say the meeting's over, I can't ask anything else. Feel free to email me, call me, stop in, whatever you need if you need questions answered. So I'm going to toss it back to the board if there's no further questions and say, you've heard my recommendations. You can take them, leave them, whatever you desire to do. So I'll let it go back to you at this point.
Questions or comments about the recommendation for the 21-22 school year at this particular moment? If not, I'll entertain a motion that we approve the recommendation as written.
So moved.
First? Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. And that was...
Do we need a voice?
Yeah, you should do a roll call vote.
Okay, we'll do a roll call vote. So, Board Member Bogdanoff.
In
favor. Board Member Medina. Sorry. Board Member Eaton. Nine. No. And since it passed, I don't have to vote. So with that, we will adjourn our meeting. Thank you everybody for joining us today. Appreciate it.